Welcome to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. If you want to listen to more of America This Week, subscribe to Sirius XM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
You're listening to America This Week. I'm Carrie Weber, along with Father Matt Malone, on Sirius XM 129, the Catholic Channel, and we are speaking with Robert Orsi of Northwestern University about his new book, History and Presence. Now, Professor Orsi, I wonder if you can talk a little bit about how your theory fits into a world that a lot of people think is sort of increasingly secular. How does that change how we experience the presence that you talk about, whether that's in the form of religious devotions or in apparitions or just in being present to one another?
Well, keeping it on the question of being present to one another is a very important question. But if we keep the focus for a second on these special religious beings, saints and so forth, the Virgin Mary, part of the argument in the book is that what the secular is not the absence of religion. That's an old view of secularism, I think, that no one holds anymore. But that secularism is the approval of a certain kind of religion. A certain kind of religion is really compatible with the secular. And that's the religion in which these figures, present in the way that I've been talking about, the way we've been talking about, has been stripped away. And I think that one of the things I really want to contribute in the book is that if you look across the modern world, not just in Catholic context, but you see that secularizing of modern societies really do try to do away with these interactions between humans and these special beings really present. They're politically troublesome, as with the story I told about the woman in Detroit. They cause trouble for zoning laws if you're interacting with special beings in your backyard. So the modern world there are many disciplines, and by disciplines I mean there are many techniques by which the modern world pushes these figures, the human relationship with these figures, to the edges. But as I say in the book, these figures keep insisting on themselves and they keep coming back.
Right. And it seems to me that this kind of approach is so important, because, you know, when we, you know, as Charles Taylor has written, living in the imminent frame as we are in a kind of modernity that's closed off to the transcendent, right?
Right.
And focused on the here and now. If all that is here and now is all that is real, then what is here and now becomes all the more important, and our politics becomes more moralistic, and the stakes become higher. And
right.
And you know, we begin to see, you know, we begin to do violence to one another because the stakes are so high. And so I think, you know, any way that we can kind of bring back into the public space or into the conversation some notion of the transcendent, some notion that there might be some end to life or experience of life that transcends the here and now, that's helpful.
Right, and that breaks into the here and now. As you know, I tell in the book a story that has been fundamental to my own intellectual development over the years, and it's an old story. It happened to me in 1976. I was traveling in Ireland, and I stopped in the town of Knock, about which I have to say I knew nothing at the time. And I noticed that there was a huge church and an enormous plaza and an airport. And so I stopped to fill my car at the tank, to fuel up. And I asked the gas station attendant, I said, what's Knock? I said, why do you have an airport like this? And he asked me, he said, are you Catholic? And I said, yes. He said, well, not a very good Catholic then. And I said, well... He said, you don't know what happened here. I said, no. And then he told me the story of the Knock apparitions. And at the end of the story, and we're talking about a gas station attendant who's pumping gas into my car, he says, here, the transcendent broke into time. And that phrase, which I immediately wrote down in my journal, has really haunted me ever since. It's that breaking in to the imminent frame, to use the language, Matt, that you were just using. It's that breaking into the imminent frame, for better and for worse. Sometimes when these beings arrive, they may cause mischief.
Right.
But the breaking in of these figures into the imminent frame is really what the book is about, and then to see what happens. And I don't think, again, as I said earlier, they didn't go away.
Right. Well, because it sticks with you. I was reminded of that exchange in *Brideshead Revisited* by Evelyn Waugh between the two main characters. One says to the other, "Well, you can't just believe something because it's beautiful, like these stories of the nativity and the ass and the ox and the virgin birth and all of that." And the other character says, "Well, of course I do. That's how I believe. I believe things are true because they're beautiful." And it's precisely a very different kind of way of embracing the world, of seeing the world.
Right,
isn't it?
I think so.
That even if you're not a believer, you ought to be able to find value in.
Right, and at the very least, you should be able to listen to
and think
for a second, for some period of time, you know, to think, okay, well, let me not move away from this right now. Let me just see what the world looks like through this other person's eyes.
Right. I think something like an apparition or even the saints sometimes can even be hard for people to enter into if they are part of the Catholic faith, if it's something they do believe, because it sounds in some ways so otherworldly, which is sort of the exact opposite of what you're saying, which is that they are sort of a part of this world and we need to consider them in that sense.
Yeah, I appreciate the way that both of you have read this book. I your comments, you're right. I am saying that they are this worldly. That's exactly right. They're not otherworldly. They are here. They're here, and they're. I mean, I say many times they're as real as, you know, one's uncle or aunt coming to visit, and it's that world that needs to be entered and not translated right away into some other category.
And I this past summer, my husband's from Ireland. We actually went to Knock, which you mentioned, and I know it's I think it's one of your favorite shrines as well.
I had my ordination retreat there.
Well, there you go. And it's fascinating to go to a place like that and think about not a place like that as kind of a place that where you go to kind of remember something, but a place where someone experienced something very profound there, and to consider. I always think about, you know, like, what would I do? You know, when we learned about these apparitions when I was young, I kind of was like, uh-oh, if I'm too good, am I going to see Mary? And then do I have obligations? If I do, you know, I don't think I had any danger of that. But
I think every Catholic kid who grew up at a certain time in the 20th century, the 19th or 20th century, had that question. What if it happens to me?
I know, I was constantly waiting. Exactly. But on some level, I think we stop asking ourselves that as we get older. But maybe not. Maybe we should not, maybe in a specific sense, but maybe saying, you know, what if, how am I responding to what these figures are saying to me now?
Exactly. And it's not always, they don't come, I should emphasize, it's not always, it's not only about apparitions. So
right.
You know, later in the book, I talk about what simply, you know, people's prayers to the saints and to the Virgin Mary, and then what they told me happened as a result of those prayers. And so in many cases, it's more subtle than the great drama of an apparition. Although, as you say, you know, if you go to a place like Lourdes or Knock, you know, you're standing in a powerful place. You know, whether or not you believe with the gas station attendant that here the transcendent broke into time. I mean, these are powerful places.
Now, to what extent are these figures or a Catholic imagination, to what extent are they countercultural in an American context?
Well, that's a good question. I think that they're very countercultural in a modern context.
Yeah.
So beyond America, I mean, I think I think they're not, you know, they're not welcome in a modern context. There's a very famous book about.
But they might actually be more welcome in the U.S. or in parts of the U.S. than they are in other parts of the West.
You're right. Well, they're certainly welcome in the Caribbean. They're welcome in other, you know, they're welcome in Brazil. But there's a book that traces what was called the stages of faith, and I was always fascinated by this because this attempted to plot how a person grows in faith. And what always struck me was that along these stages, the most immature, according to this theorist, the most immature stage like stage 1.2 or something, was the stage where people had interactions with beings like this. And it was precisely as a modern person, you needed to grow through stages 2, 3, 4, 5, until finally you got to stage 6, where you were religious but without any of this, that you were religious in really what amounted to a secular way.
Right.
So these figures have, you know, a bad reputation.
So you kind of arrived at this kind of Kantian moral framework, and that was the pinnacle.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I mean, that in and of itself is interesting. I recall myself having a conversation with a group of people in Louvain. I studied in Louvain for a while, and we had we were having a conversation about ecumenical dialogue, and they said, you know, in the interest of bringing together all of these different groups that have different viewpoints and keeping the peace, we're going to bracket questions of truth, right? Mm. And I just thought to myself that was odd, because it seemed to me that the one thing that, perhaps one of the only things that these folks all had in common was that they all felt that the claims that they made were true. Right.
Right.
And yet there's that sense, isn't there, that that, you know, that we have to kind of we have to bring out we have to take the superstition away from this belief and kind of arrive at this place of pure critical thinking.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we have a caller, Robert from Medway, Massachusetts. Robert, you're on America This Week.
Hi, my name is Robert. I was telling the call screener that years ago, while I was distributing communion, I saw a Eucharist change in my hands. You know, I was saying, you know, the body of Christ. You know, the woman said amen. She stuck out her tongue, and I'm reaching out to give her the host. And the left quarter of it literally vanished. It was like watching on Star Trek. I saw fragments of spin and they disappeared. And I'm looking at the woman's shoulder and the pew tops and back to the host before I realized the whole new edge was a bright, bright red. And had I turned the host like a quarter turn clockwise, it would look like a little Valentine's heart, you know, like an upper curve, a lower curve, an upper curve. And each of the upper curves, the line of the, you know, the little cross on the Eucharist met the upper curve right in the center. You know, I was blown away by the symmetricalness, and also the new edge had kind of the jaggedness, or not so much a jaggedness, but it you know, like the edge of a quarter, you know, how you have a machine look. Mm-hmm. The whole new edge, you know, had that type of look to it. And anyway, I was blown away, didn't say a word to it about it. And I got home that night, and I had taken a half dozen seniors to their church and to home, didn't say a word to them about it. And I told one of them, this woman, months before, had fallen over one of her grandkids' toys. She had struck her head, and she heard all the way down her back, pop, 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 had compressed three vertebrae and been bedridden. And I told her about what I had seen, and she said, oh, I hate to interrupt your story, but she said, my whole body is shaking. And then she said, the chronic pain in my back has just subsided. And two other people that I told that week had physical manifestations as well.
Wow.
And, you know, to me, it was just the Lord confirming, you know, yeah, this happened.
Okay.
But anyway, I did want to share that with you. I ended up, you know, making it part of a book I wrote. And,
yeah.
But, you know, anyway, what do you think about it?
Well, Robert, thank you very much for sharing that story. Robert Orsi, I mean, that much of the world would just dismiss that sort of thing from right out of hand, wouldn't they?
They would, and I also think that I was struck by the fact that Father Robert said that you know, he didn't tell anybody right away, and yeah, there's really, and I understand why that you might not. But one of the things I hope the book does, and again, I'm not only talking about Catholics, but I think that in human experience, there's far more of these sorts of interactions. I mean, the human imagination is a very powerful thing, and I'm sure that as you know, the book circulates, or as I go around and talk about the book, people will tell me these stories. Absolutely.
And it offers a chance to listen, as you say, and to be present to others and
right.
In their religious experience.
Right. But it really is. I mean, I don't know how you all were feeling. I appreciated that story very much.
Yeah, I did too.
But I think the context in which that story could be told, you can imagine people a whole range of reactions. A good percentage of them not favorable or not welcoming or even dismissive,
right,
or worse.
Hmm. And yet we, and yet even those among us who are skeptical dismiss such accounts, I think, at our peril, because whatever occurred, it was certainly mysterious. But just, you know, simply because something is mysterious doesn't mean that it isn't real. And as you say, so many of our interactions, so much of human living is infused with mystery.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, the book is called History and Presence by Robert A. Orsi, and you can pick it up where all fine books are sold, and you can also read this very favorable review that we just published in America. Dr. Orsi, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you both for a great conversation.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
When we come back, we're going to talk with Michael Rossman, a Jesuit on location in Poland for World Youth Day. You're listening to America This Week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Thank you for listening to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. If you want to hear the full show every week, subscribe to SiriusXM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.